Let's sit down, and we're going to turn in our Bibles to James and chapter 3. We've been, over the last few weeks, we've been tracing our way through James. And one of the things about tracing our way just through a letter or a book in the Bible is there's a sense in which you can't predict what is coming. I can't set the agenda for what I can speak about. You know, the scriptures do that for me. And we're reading today about our words and our speech. This is on page 1214, right down the bottom of the page, Taming the Tongue. Chapter 3, reading from verse 1. Not many of you should presume to be teachers, my brothers, because you know that we who teach will be judged more strictly. We all stumble in many ways. If anyone is never at fault in what he says, he is a perfect man, able to keep his whole body in check. When we put bits into the mouths of horses to make them obey us, we can turn the whole animal. Or take ships as an example. Although they're so large and are driven by strong winds, they are steered by a very small rudder wherever the pilot wants to go. Likewise, the tongue is a small part of the body, but it makes great boasts. Consider what a great forest is set on fire by a small spark. The tongue also is a fire, a world of evil among the parts of the body. It corrupts the whole person, sets the whole course of his life on fire, and is itself set on fire by hell. All kinds of animals, birds, reptiles, and creatures of the sea are being tamed and have been tamed by man. But no man can tame the tongue. It is a restless evil, full of deadly poison. With the tongue, we praise our Lord and Father, and with it we curse men who have been made in God's likeness. Out of the same mouth come praise and cursing. My brothers, this should not be. Can both fresh water and salt water flow from the same spring? My brothers, can a fig tree bear olives or a grapevine bear figs? Neither can a salt spring produce fresh water. So there is our passage for today, James chapter 3. And the overriding kind of title I've taken for this series as we've looked through James has been The Journey Home. Because James, the Apostle James, is speaking to people who are not at home. There's a sense in which they are at home, but another way in which they're not. Because their home, the people that James is speaking to, there's a sense in which their heart's home, the place they desire to be more than anything else, is back in Jerusalem. They want to be there because that, as far as they're concerned, that's where God lives. And if they're going to be close to God, then they want to be back in Jerusalem. So there is this pull within them to be in Jerusalem. But James is writing to people who, he says in chapter 1, verse 1, have been scattered throughout the whole world. And they're living in places far, far away from Jerusalem, the place where, in terms of the hearts, that's where they want to be. And so there's this pull within them. And James is saying to them, look, many of you, you will stay where you are until your dying day. But this is how to live where you are. And in a sense, have a journey in your own heart. Have a journey home. Not geographically to Jerusalem, because you may never get there. But have a journey in your own heart. Home to God. Close to God. Just because you're not in Jerusalem doesn't mean that you have to be distant from God. And that's true for us, that wherever we find ourselves, there might be that pull within us. I want to be closer to God. And if only I could do this or do that or do the other. Or I could move or have this job or be with these people. And the message to us is, wherever we are, wherever we live, whatever we're doing, there is a way of being at home with God right where we are. And that's been the theme that we have here in James. But today, we're thinking particularly about the power of speech. Let me get that on there. The power of speech. Now, when I was growing up, my mum sometimes used to say this to me. Do you know this one? Sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me. Okay, quick survey. Who's for true? No. Who's for false? Now, what's this about? Do you know, I was brought up, in my family, there was mum and dad, there was five of us boys and one girl. And I'm the youngest surviving of the boys now, and there's my sister. And I guess the thinking was that if I let words hurt me, I was a wuss. You know that word? You know? If I let words hurt me. And so what do you do? Words do hurt you. What do? You put up a barrier, don't you? And you become hard. And you have to, because somehow you don't want words to hurt you, and you're being told sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me. And I'm thinking, words are hurting me. And even now, even today, I could tell you of words that were spoken to me when I was very young. And when I think of them and the situation in which they were said, they still hurt. Is that just me? Is that some of you? Words are powerful. And today, it's all about words. That's what James is concerned with. The issue in our passage today is speech and the power of words. And he begins this particular passage in chapter 1, verse 1. Not many of you should presume to be teachers. How many teachers? Great. Not many of you should presume to be teachers, says James, because you know that we who teach will be judged more strictly. Now, why? Well, that's not fair, is it? Teachers being judged more strictly, perhaps we should be. Why? Well, and the reason within this verse is because teachers use words. The majority of our teaching, even though we might say, well, I try to teach by what I do. People follow my example and so on. You know as well as I do that teaching predominantly is done with words. And in terms of what James, the Apostle James, is speaking about here, he's talking about words. Teachers use words, and their words, the words of a teacher, make a difference in the lives of many people. Now here, if you teach in a school context, I would suggest it's not what you tell the children about splitting the atom that's going to make much of a difference. It might make a difference. Should it make a difference? You know? Or about correct grammar in a sentence. Listen, it's the bits in between. The words that are spoken to pupils, to students, these are the words that make a difference. And in particular, teachers have this influence in terms of what they say. And you know, sometimes I reflect on words. I write a lot of words. I think in words. When I speak, what happens? Well, it's almost as if, can you imagine this? I speak words. I say a word and the word leaves my mouth. Can you imagine this? And it's floating through the air. And it floats through the air and eventually it makes contact with your ears. And then it enters into your mind and it mixes with all your thoughts and your imaginations and your thought world. And there it comes to rest. And my words have a tremendous power of planting seeds of ideas, thoughts, good things and bad things within your minds. They can be words to encourage you, to lift you up, to strengthen you. They can be words that condemn you. And I might not intend them to condemn. But as my words, somehow they detach from my mouth and they make their way to your ears and your thoughts and your imaginations. By the time they arrive in your head, they can condemn and they can do great harm. Words have tremendous power. Tremendous power. And as I say, these words, they can build up or they can knock down. These words can encourage or they can equally discourage. They can inspire or they can bore. Now this word inspire is literally words can give life. Words can literally, if they inspire, they give life and energy to somebody. You hear what somebody, I can reflect just as much as sticks and stones will certainly not break my bones, but they will hurt me. And I can remember when I was young, words that were said to me. Do you know, I can also remember those who've spoken to me in my life, and they have, I would say now, they inspired me. They spoke words that gave me life. They turned my life around. They gave me new direction. They gave me hope and encouragement. Words that gave me strength to continue what I was doing. But of course, James in this letter is talking about whole lives and not just about speech. And he's focusing on speech. He's focusing on the tongue just as one part of the body. But clearly there's an issue that he's wanting to address about speech, about words. And it's about the discipline required to live a life that pleases God. And he wants to come down from lots of actions, come all the way down to one of the smallest parts of our bodies and say, okay, if we are going to have the discipline to live a life that pleases God, and in chapter 1 he talks about living what he called the righteous life, the life that pleases God, the life of Jesus. If we're going to live that life, then don't start with the big things. Let's start with this little thing. And if we can start here and do something about what we say, the words we speak, we can deal with our tongue, then maybe we will have some hope of living that disciplined, that good life. And here he then immediately goes on to give some illustrations. And he gives two illustrations that I think are intended to encourage. And then there's one illustration to warn. Okay, so two illustrations to encourage, one illustration to encourage. And first of all, we have this lovely looking horse. Well, what does James say in his passage? He says this, we put bits into the mouths of horses to make them obey us. And right here, you can just see the end of the bit. You see that? Just a very small piece of metal that's put into the mouth of the horse. And what does James say? When we put bits into the mouths of horses to make them obey us, we can turn the whole animal. And James is saying just like that. It's just a small thing. But by controlling our tongues, by being careful in terms of what we say, we can live the discipline for our whole life that pleases God. So that's the first illustration he uses. Not the horse so much as this little bit that goes across the horse's mouth. Tiny little thing. Okay, second illustration. Oh, it's a big ship. Picture off the internet. I don't know anything about this ship. How do we say that? Maersk Sealand. It's a cargo ship, and no doubt when it's full, have lots of containers on it. It looks like a absolutely vast ship. Okay? Now, what does James say? He says, ships are steered by a very small rudder. Horses, a bit within the in their mouth. We can steer them, control them. And then he goes big. Well, even ships, and of course he wouldn't have had ships this big, but the principle still applies. Ships are steered by a very small rudder. And this is the rudder at the back of that ship. I don't know if you can see the rudder all the way over here. There it is. And it's relatively very small rudder. That vast ship is steered and controlled. And James is encouraging, saying, look, just like we can steer a horse with a small thing, just like a boat can be steered by a rudder, a small thing. So if we can deal with our tongues, if we can deal with what we say to one another, then that's the beginning of controlling, disciplining, living the life that pleases God. So we have these two illustrations to encourage: the bit in the horse's mouth and the rudder on a ship. And this is about the discipline required to live a life of love. The discipline to live the life of love. James has already said, he's already spoken about what he calls the royal law. Love your neighbor as yourself. Now, I like the idea of the royal law, because in antiquity, all the people had laws they had to live by. And if they didn't obey the laws, then the ultimate power, the king, could punish them for a disobedience to those laws. But then there was the royal law. And that was the king's way of living. He didn't have to live the way everybody else lived. He could live his own way. And what does James say is the royal law? It's something everybody else would aspire to, but it's the way the king lives. And he says the way the king lives, King Jesus lives, is love your neighbor as yourself. Yes, all the other laws aspire to that royal law, loving your neighbor as yourself. So controlling the tongue. And there is this discipline required to live the life of love. It begins with what we say, what you say, what I say. And of course, there's no criticism here about words of kindness, about words of mercy or love or appreciation. That's not what James is saying. He's not saying don't speak words of kindness or don't speak words of mercy or words of love and appreciation. Of course, we want more and more of those. But rather, it is criticism of words that, as James says, we curse. In verse 9, with the tongue we praise our Lord and Father, and with it we curse men who have been made in God's likeness. Out of the same mouth come praise and cursing. So we can bless people, we can do good, encouraging words out of our mouths. But also, James says, this curious thing is, we also curse people. Now, have we got something coming up here? With it, we curse human beings who've been made in God's likeness. What does it mean to curse? What does it mean to curse? Something I was talking to Jandine about on some of the young people on Friday night. What does it mean to curse? Well, cursing is the opposite of blessing. To bless, I would say, is this. It's the desire that heaven might open and that a person might be lifted up and enjoy the good things of heaven. That's probably not a dictionary definition, but that's one I like. So if you bless somebody, normally, you know, when you sneeze, bless you, you know. But genuinely, to bless somebody, you want heaven to open up and you want that person to be lifted up and enjoy all the good things of heaven. So blessing is a very powerful and very good thing. Now, cursing is the opposite. So if blessing is to be lifted up and heaven to be opened, what's cursing?
Broken down.
To be broken down. And what to open up?
Hell.
That's what it's about. That's what I said to young people on Friday. To curse is to desire that somebody might be put down. And really, it's about when you curse somebody, you want hell to open up and for that person to go down and to suffer hell. Okay? Now, James is saying, this little thing in our lives, we need to learn to control it, just like a bit in the horse's mouth, a rudder on the ship. We need to control it because we say good things that bless, that encourage, that lift up. But also with that same little thing in our bodies, we can curse. And instead of lifting somebody up, we curse them and we bring them down. Now, you might not think of things that have been said to you as curses. But I wonder whether sometimes we do curse one another. Not by swearing at one another, but by saying things that just take us down. Have you ever had a conversation with somebody and you know the experience, you've had a conversation with somebody and you walk away and you feel fantastic. You had those conversations? And it's not, they haven't said, you're looking good today, you know, or anything like that. Or they haven't even said thank you for anything. But you just had a conversation, you come away thinking, man, I really enjoyed talking to that person. But then there are others, you've had a conversation with them, and you come away and you're just disturbed. You're hurt. And again, it's nothing they've said as such, but somehow you feel brought down. The power of words to both lift up and to bring down. So James talks about cursing, the bringing down. And he then gives this illustration to warn them. And this is the illustration of a great forest is set on fire by a small spark. And there we have a match sparking into flame. And he says, just by this small thing, just as a bit in a horse can control it, the rudder on a ship can tell it where to go. It's on a very much negative side. So a forest fire can be started, not with something big, but with something small. So there is that warning. There is that warning to us, our words, that we should be careful about what we say. To curse is that desire that somebody might be put down. It's about, let me list some things, it's about reducing a person. It's about reducing a person. Discouraging them, demeaning them. It's about taking life and vitality from them instead of inspiring them, doing the opposite. It's about disheartening somebody or somebody being dejected following speaking to us. So James, very simple, the challenge about the power of words, the power of our speech. And that James's heart is not so much about the speech or the words, but it's about the whole life. And he's crying out to these people who are all over the world, as far as he's concerned, that they might be able to live where they are, have this heart for God, and live a life of love and kindness and mercy and appreciation for one another. And he's coming right down to the basics and saying, if we're going to do this, all of us, if we're going to do this, then we need to watch what we say. We don't want to curse, we want to bless. And if we can just deal with our speech, then we can make such a difference. So what about us? I'm going to suggest four things. Two things from this passage and then two simply from my own reflection. Using words to encourage and bless arises from. What does it arise from? A right vision of others. James in chapter 3, verse 9. He speaks about cursing those who've been made in God's likeness. And he's really saying, how can you curse somebody? How can you want to demean somebody, put somebody down, If you see and you understand, they're made in God's likeness. They're made by God. And do you know what? However you look at that person, do you know what God thinks? God looks at that person and thinks they are the most beautiful thing he created. And he loves them with a passion. And they're the best. And the skills and the gifts that they are trying to use, and you might think, well, that's not very good. God is going, well done. That's great. I'm really enjoying that. Do that again. People who are made in God's likeness. If we can see one another as made in God's likeness, however much about the other person grates against us, if we can see them, if we have a right vision, right sight for that other person, they're made by God in God's likeness, then it may be that we don't say what we were going to say, but we just hold our tongue because we want to bless them and not to curse them. So using words to encourage and bless arises, first of all, from understanding who you're talking to. You're talking to somebody who's been created, made in God's likeness. Second is self-awareness. What are my ability to say the wrong thing? You see, I think a lot of the time we get into trouble with words because we're not self-aware. We think we can just say what we like and we can just open our mouth and all the words can come out, and we're just not aware of the damage that our words can do. And you know what it's like. Sometimes you try and control it. Other times you just can't be bothered and you just let it all out. Self-awareness. My awareness that my words can have a powerful effect upon you, whether I'm standing here or just in a conversation with you, my awareness of that should make a difference to what I say to you. If we have no self-awareness, if we're not aware of the damage our words can do, the power to influence somebody else, if we don't have that awareness, then we'll just go right on ahead and say whatever comes out of our head. You know? You know, people say, I just say it as I see it. You know, and that kind of thing. There are other sayings like that, aren't there? And I can't think right now. But you say it as you see it. And I'm just speaking the truth to you. Well, I'd rather not hear it. You know? I remember a young people's group when I was young. When? Used to have people say, I've got something to say to you. It's said in love. And I knew I had to grit my teeth then because it was going to be bad. You know? But self-awareness, aware that whatever I start with, however I set it up, self-awareness. I would guess that the people in my experience who have hurt me most have demonstrated with their words, hurt me most with their words, are people who've had a lack of self-awareness, who don't realize the power of their words upon me. So words used to encourage and bless arise, first of all, from a right vision of others. We're made in God's likeness. Don't put them down. Lift them up. And then self-awareness, aware that your words, doesn't matter how old or how young you are, your words have great from James chapter 1, be quick to listen, slow to speak, says James. Quick to listen, slow to speak. Sometimes it's best to remain silent. Not say anything at all. And then thirdly, a heart of thankfulness. A heart of thankfulness. It seems to me that if we seek to live with a heart of thankfulness, it changes our perspective, not just on others, but on everything. You know, some people are grumpy. What is it, a TV program? Isn't it Grumpy Old Men? Or Grumpy Old Men? Wasn't there one about grumpy old women? You know, and you know what it's like. You watch these programs and you laugh. Of course you do. But you know, thankfulness changes your grumpiness. You know, I guarantee I can look at people who are grumpy and say their problem is they're not grateful for what they've got. They're not thankful for what they've got. You know? Thankfulness changes you, it changes your perspective, and it will change your words. If you have something to say to somebody else and you're not sure how it's going to come across, do you remember what I said about me speaking words and they make their way through the air and they land in your ears and into your imagination and they can condemn even though I don't intend that? If you're not sure what's going to happen between words leaving your mouth and reaching somebody else's ears, just begin by thanking them. And even praying, thank you, God, for this person. Thank you because of the gifts you've given, and so on. Thankfulness changes things. And fourthly, is a heart of tenderness. A heart of tenderness. If you have, remember, I said right at the beginning, sticks and stones may hurt my bones, but words will never hurt me. Words hurt me, so what do? I have a hard heart. I put up a barrier because I don't want words to hurt me. Now, the opposite to a hard heart is a tender heart. And if we have a tender heart, do you know what happens? You hear your own words before you speak them. If you have a tender heart, you hear your own words before you speak them. If you have a hard heart, for whatever reason, you don't. Tender heart, you hear your words before you speak them, and therefore you can be careful about what you say. So with this, an encouragement, a challenge, all about our words, all about what we say. And may it be that for us, living here in Evesham, yearning to be closer to God, to know his blessing upon us, may it be that just for now, we focus on our words, what we say, that we might be those who bless and do not curse. We might encourage and give life and inspire one another so that we can all be the best that we can be. We can be the people that God has created us to be.